Well, it was fun having the words "Who sinned" on the sign outside this week. I got lots of comments on that. And some people didn't like it, of course. Said, well, everybody sinned. Don't you know that? And I said, well, just tune in Sunday at 9 or 11 and we'll figure it out. Video audience, good to have you with us as always. Today, I just want to talk about experts. And you know, there's something about experts that's irritating to everybody. But I remember people, you know, who pretend to be experts on a subject of some sort, and it's clear that they don't have a clue what it's about. You know, I got a farm background, and every day from like sixth grade through high school, every day I fed cattle and every day I fed pigs. That was just my job. I did it. And I got to know a little bit about pigs and cattle. I don't know everything there is to know about them, but I was familiar with a few things. And then I left for college. And I had a young teacher there. He was kind of trying out things. But he started talking about God's kind creation and how animals were so gentle and all that. You know, he was the kind that, you know, wore sandals and socks, and he's kind of a flower child from this, you know, whatever. It was in the mid-70s when this was taking place. But he was really interested in the gentle parts of God's creation. And he was talking about how cows are such fine, gentle beasts, and same for pigs. And I thought, oh boy. Yeah, I personally knew somebody who'd been gored to death by a bull. I had heard of people having heart attacks in hog yards and being chewed up by the pigs. I've even been chased by one of these old boys, a Duroc boar. And a Duroc boar is a particularly aggressive fella. In the 60s and 70s, farmers would use these to sire their herds of pigs because back then people wanted leaner pork, and they produced leaner pork. Now we like the fat pork, you know, as fat as we can make it. We like bacon, you know, but these guys produced much leaner, drier pork. I've been chased by one of those old boys, and actually it was kind of humorous. He was coming after me, and I ran into one of my dad's tool sheds. He followed me in there, and I thought, I've got to defend myself against this guy. And there was a ball pin hammer on the workbench. I took it and threw it at him. He opened up his mouth to grab the hammer and knocked one of his big old teeth out. And so, being the weird person that I am, he left, the boar left. I guess that hurt quite a bit, and stopped his attack on me. But he was going to have me for lunch. And I took the tooth, smoothed down the rough edges, drilled a little hole in it, and wore it as a necklace for the rest of my high school career. I thought that was kind of funny, but you know, like I said, I've been chased by Duroc boar. I've seen chicken hawks kill rabbits. I've seen what coyotes do to goats. In my office, I have this skull, which came from a coyote den that's on some property that my dad owns. And I was out hunting pheasants one day, and I stumbled across this coyote den, and there was a goat skull like that. So I put it in my office because it really freaks out fundamentalists who come in there. Oh, you're worshiping Satan. No, it's a goat skull. But anyway, I found that thing in one winter in the snow, and I just took it in there. The coyotes had to drag that goat a half a mile. The nearest place where there were goats was half a mile away, and that's kind of an amazing thing that they do. But my irritation grew with this young professor. And finally, I asked him, have you ever been within 10 feet of an actual cow? And then he just looked down. He wouldn't answer that. It was so irritating, you know, that he was pretending to be this expert on nature. And he didn't know a thing about it. I decided that he must have had one of these as a kid and thought, oh, how cute, nice little farm animals. And anybody that's ever actually worked on a farm knows that that's complete fiction. But we all know people who think they have things figured out, but really don't have a clue. All you have to do is start talking about politics to somebody or American history. It's amazing how people don't have a clue what went on. You know, people who think that, you know, George Washington and Abraham Lincoln were contemporaries and things like that. There's all kinds of stuff like that that goes on. Religion, oh man, there are so many people who believe that they are experts on it. And what I've noticed over the years is that people tend to embrace ignorance when it comes to that. When it became obvious that the Muskegon classes of the Reformed Church was going to dissolve, I said at a classes meeting, why don't we all just go to the Holland classes as a group? And there was immediate objections to that. It was sad, but it was almost amusing. Well, no, we can't go to the Holland classes because there's too many professors there, that college and that seminary. We can't go there because it's got all those professors. Professors, the guy called them. And my response immediately was, yes, we should avoid people who actually know things. You know, but that was the attitude that was there. They were blind to reality and want to stay that way. Instead of letting Jesus shine a light on the reality, they preferred the darkness. Today's passage from John chapter 9 talks about that, and we're going to go through it. It's a good narrative. Walking down the street, Jesus saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked, Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, causing him to be born blind? See, the popular belief of those in those days is kind of like it is today, you know. If you were stricken with some disease, it was because of the sin in your life. So if you were born blind, well, you're probably pretty sinful, or your parents were. But the Jews, at least a certain segment of the Pharisees, believed in the pre-existence of souls. That they believed that every human being was created in the Garden of Eden, and that we all fell with Adam, and with these pre-existent souls had an opportunity to sin even before they took on a human body. And so that's why babies were born defective, like this guy who was born blind. It must have been some sin he committed even before he was born. It's twisted, but that's how they believed. Now, today it's the same thing. A popular belief is that disease is punishment for sin. You know, you hear that every once in a while. And sometimes that does happen. Sometimes we make bad choices that make us physically sick. But most of the time, things just happen. Most of the time, it's nobody's fault. Things just happen. There's no sinister cause behind it. And that's what Jesus was getting at here. He said, Jesus said, you're asking the wrong question. You're looking for someone to blame. There's no such cause effect here. Look instead for what God can do. We need to be energetically at work for the one who sent me here. Working while the sun shines. When night falls, the workday is over. For as long as I'm in the world, there's plenty of light. I am the world's light. No cause and effect. Just happens. So let's look for what God can do in this situation. And then Jesus makes his famous statement. He says, I am the light of the world. He's here to bring light. And then something weird happens. He said this and then spit in the dust, made a clay paste with the saliva, rubbed the paste on the blind man's eyes, and said, go wash at the pool of Siloam. And Siloam means sent. The man went and washed and saw. Soon the town was buzzing. His relatives and those who year after year had seen him as a blind man begging were saying, why, isn't this the man we knew who sat here and begged? So you understand that the thing about spitting in the mud, or spitting and making mud, seems really strange to us. But in that day, saliva was considered to have healing properties. For instance, it was believed that if you had any type of respiratory diseases, somebody would fast for a couple of days, no food, no water, and then spit and rub the spit on you and you'd get better. They actually thought that worked. And they considered that healing property. So Jesus was just using the, the media of the day. I think when he was making that mud, he remembered creating humans from the dust of the earth. And he was giving this guy a new set of eyes. He's creating new eyes. And it's an obvious miracle. And all the miracles of Jesus have many layers of meaning. This one specifically has a lot of spiritual meaning, that he brings light to souls in the dark. So they're trying to figure out who this guy is. And this is what it says. Others said, it's him, all right. But others objected, it's not the same man at all, it just looks like him. He said, it's me, the very one. They said, how did your eyes get opened? A man named Jesus made a paste and rubbed it on my eyes and told me, go to Siloam and wash. I did what he said. When I washed, I saw. So where is he? I don't know. Then they marched the man to the Pharisees. This day when Jesus made the paste and healed his blindness was the Sabbath. The Pharisees grilled him again on how he had come to see. He said, he put a clay paste on my eyes, I washed and now I see. Some of the Pharisees said, obviously this man can't be from God. He doesn't keep the Sabbath. I see the Pharisees thought they were the experts on God. And since this was done on a Saturday, their holy day, the healer could not be from God. You know, it just shocks you. It's like, here's a man who's born blind, never seen before. He's healed, but because it happened on the Sabbath, it can't be a God thing. Isn't that amazing? You just want to go up to those Pharisees and say, what do you have, manure for brains? What's going on here? You know, why would you think this is a bad thing? It's a tremendous gift of sight, and you're bashing it. And the narrative follows. Others countered. How can a bad man do miraculous God-revealing things like this? There was a split in their ranks. They came back at the blind man. You're the expert. He opened your eyes. What do you say about him? He said he's a prophet. See, prophets were believed to have this special connection with God. And some of the Pharisees thought Jesus might be from God. There was some division in the ranks of the Pharisees. But the Jews didn't believe it. Didn't believe the man was blind to begin with. So they called the parents of the man, now bright-eyed with sight. They asked him, is this your son, the one you say was born blind? Well, yeah, they did see, you know, so how is it that he now sees? I mean, check with his parents. Ask his mom if he was really blind. Ask if they would know how he got his sight. It's almost ridiculous. His parents said, we know he is our son, and we know he was born blind, but we don't know how he came to see. Haven't a clue about who opened his eyes. Why don't you ask him? He's a grown man and can speak for himself. His parents were talking like this because they were intimidated by the Jewish leaders who had already decided that anyone who took a stand that this was the Messiah would be kicked out of the meeting place. That's why his parents said, ask him, he's a grown man. It was a bullying on the part of the Pharisees. They were going to kick these parents out of the synagogue if they were supportive of Jesus. They called the man back a second time. The man who had been blind, and told him, give credit to God. We know this man's an imposter. He replied, I know nothing about that one way or the other, but I know one thing for sure. I was blind. Now I see. It's almost humorous. He didn't know if Jesus was an imposter or not, but he said, well, I've got my sight. They said, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? You can hear the frustration in the guy by then. I've told you over and over and you haven't listened. Why do you want to hear it again? Are you so eager to become his disciples? Well, yeah, you almost have to chuckle when you read that. And with that, they jumped all over him. You might be a disciple of that man, but we're disciples of Moses. We know for sure that God spoke to Moses, but we have no idea where this man even comes from. See, they were the experts in religion, but they didn't have a clue about the nature of God. It's kind of an interesting split there. The man replied, "This is amazing. You claim to know nothing about him, but the fact is he opened my eyes. It's well known that God isn't at the beck and call of sinners, but he listens carefully to anyone who lives in reverence and does his will. That someone opened the eyes of a man born blind has never been heard of, ever. If this man didn't come from God, he wouldn't be able to do anything." Facts sometimes run against the experts. And these were definitely fighting words for the Pharisees. They said, "You're nothing but dirt. How dare you take that tone with us?" Then they threw him out into the street. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out and went and found him. He asked him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And here again, you see the repeated theme of Jesus. He prefers the outcasts to the experts always. The experts were offended by this act of grace because it rattled their preconceptions of who God was. You can't heal on the Sabbath day. That's heresy. They had to defend that position. The man said to Jesus, point him out to me, sir, so that I can believe in him. Jesus said, "You're looking right at him. Don't you recognize my voice?" "Master, I believe," the man said, and worshiped him. So now the light has fully come to this man. The word for believe there is the Greek word pistuo. It means more than just believe. It means to believe and trust. You know, we've got the chair up there on the wall with a very simple word, trust, underneath it. And what it talks about, very simply, this verse is the same thing. Just as you trust a chair to hold you up, so you trust Jesus to save you. That's what he was talking about here. He trusted in Jesus. And it says he worshiped him. That's not the best translation. It comes from the Greek word proskuneo, which means literally to kiss the hand of. And it was a way of showing that you thought somebody had a superior rank to you. It was acknowledging superiority. And that's what was going on here. Jesus then said, "I came into the world to bring everything into the clear light of day, making all the distinctions clear so that those who have never seen will see, and those who have made a great pretense of seeing will be exposed as blind." So here again is the purpose of this sign. The purpose of this miracle is he wanted to show that his mission was to bring everything into light. The blind will see, and the experts will be exposed as blind. Some Pharisees overheard him and said, "Does this mean that you're calling us blind?" And Jesus said, "If you were really blind, you would be blameless. But since you claim to see everything so well, you're accountable for every fault and failure." So here's a summary of the event. The blind are blameless. But the blind who claim they can see are the ones that are in trouble. Trouble because they tell everyone they have it all figured out. I've had some trouble with church officials from time to time. And I've so much wanted to quote verse 41 to them. I never did because I'm chicken. But I should have. Now I'm not in trouble anymore, so I can quote it freely. But I think they're afraid of me now because of my seniority. I don't know what it is. Gray hair does a lot. We got any cat people in here? How many of you own cats? You own cats? Well, there's a few of you that own cats. You can admit it. It's not a sign of weakness. You know, it is a sign of weakness. Well, have you ever seen a litter of kittens being born? That's kind of an interesting time. Now, this is not a political statement about cats, okay? This is just a newborn kitten here. And those of you who know cats know that that'll be a male because of the markings on him. But it's interesting with kittens. We used to have them born in one of the hay lofts all the time. They are blind and deaf at birth. And about 2 weeks old, their eyes open and their hearing starts developing. Well, those cats are kind of like us because spiritually we're all born blind. And we stay that way until we get serious about Jesus. That's what Jesus talks about, being born again. We're blind until that happens. He wants to heal us. The Pharisees did not want that. They preferred to stay blind. They didn't want to be healed. They didn't want to see. Now, the question for us is, question for you and me is, do we want to be healed of our spiritual blindness? And I believe we do. Jesus will remove blindness. He'll anoint the eyes of our souls. He'll let you see spiritual reality. And that light is free. You just ask Jesus for it, and he'll give it. He wants to give it to you. And that light is better than darkness. Knowledge is always better than ignorance. I read a story a long time ago, and I tried to find it, and I couldn't. But it's about this family of kids somewhere in the mountains in Europe, and they saw an avalanche coming down the mountain that they were on. They knew that it was going to be trouble, so they saw this cabin, and they went in the cabin hoping that that would shelter them from it. And the snow came down, completely covered the cabin, so it was pitch dark and cold in there. And they were in there like that for 3 or 4 days. I don't know where the story comes from. I wish I could find it, but I didn't. But anyway, so these people are in this thing. They're staying hydrated by eating handfuls of snow. And they can't see a thing. After about 3 or 4 days, some of the snow slides off of the roof of the cabin. And it gets, some light comes in a window. And then they see a fireplace, stack of firewood. They see some cured hams hanging from the ceiling, bags of vegetables. So they had food and they had heat and they had light. It was there the whole time, but they couldn't see it because they were blinded by the darkness. Now that, to me, is a parallel of what Jesus does for us. He opens our eyes so that we can see the things that will sustain us. When you ask Jesus for the light in your life, it doesn't mean that you're going to have all the answers. In fact, if you do have all the answers, well, talk to somebody else, don't talk to me. But you will have is your eyes opened to a rich and satisfying life. And like the man born blind, you can trust Jesus. You can acknowledge that he's Lord. You can let him shine a light into your life. So let's believe this good news and live in peace. Would you pray with me, please? Lord, we don't know what kind of blindness constantly creeps up on us. We don't know what kind of blindness we have because we're blind to it. We ask for your light in our lives. So just as you healed this man born blind to show us what your powers are, we ask you remove any remnants of blindness from our souls so that we can see clearly the life that you have for us. Amen.